to the Mug Meeting Summaries podcast. I'm Gilbert Detilieu. Our April meeting's main topic featured Adam Thompson, who gave us the who, what, where, when, and why of Unix certification.
So, Unix certification, who can we get it from? All these people provide Unix certification. So there is quite a range.
STM too?
SCO is still in existence, and they still officially have a certification program. Anybody's guess as to how much longer that will be the case, but they haven't completely died and imploded yet, so it might be longer than any of us expect.
Well, they sold the division, so it's a matter of how long the new company keeps things going.
We'll see. So LPI, cross-vendor, not tied to any specific distro or vendor. CompTIA, again, not tied to any single specific. BSD Cert, not tied to any specific vendor. Everything else is vendor-specific. So LPI, and we'll just take it from the top. Multi-vendor certification. Now, obviously, Linux Professional Institute, they only certify Linux. This is not a generic Unix certification. However, given that it covers Red Hat, SUSE, IBM's version of Linux, whatever it is, whatever SGI was running, Turbo Linux, covers HP's version of Linux, Mandrake Soft, technically it covers Intel's, what the heck's it called?
Migo's
the new one, yeah. So it covers the entire, it covers all the bases. So pretty much every Unix-ism that has ever been and is still in modern use is covered somewhere in the LPI curriculum.
You don't mention Ubuntu.
No, I don't.
Canonical, sorry. That's
canonical. LPI does cover Ubuntu and Debian. However, neither the Debian Foundation nor Canonical have officially endorsed LPI. Okay. So the certification covers it, but it's not reciprocal, if you will. They have three levels of certification, LPI C1, 2, and 3. I was the first LPI C1 in Manitoba. I was the first LPI C2 in Manitoba. I never got around to doing 3. Kind of stopped caring. Well, I did 2, and then there was like a 7-year gap before they came up with 3. And, by that point, I would have had to rewrite 1 and 2 to get 3. Despite the fact I think certifications are worthwhile, they're not so worthwhile that I want to spend money gratuitously rewriting the exams. But, and you'll see this is a trend that goes for most certification programs. There's entry level, there's medium, you know, and then there's, for some of them, sort of the expert level, which says either you spend way too much time writing exams, or you really know your stuff. Take your pick. Usually at the high end, they get into specialization. In LPI, we've got mixed environment, security, high availability, virtualization, and web and intranet. So you write one of those specializations, not necessarily all of them, although you could do all of them if you had nothing better to do with your time. Key thing with LPI is you have to have knowledge of, at least basic knowledge, of all of the covered distributions. Which basically means you have to know RPM, and you have to know apt-get, and you have to know, worry about Gentoo. Yum. You don't have to worry about that. Yum, thank you. Mm. Yeah, and if you know Yum, RPM, and the apt-get slash dpackage stuff, that's pretty much where they stop. CompTIA. CompTIA is not only vendor neutral, they're technology neutral, they're pretty much everything neutral as long as you give them money. These guys are famous for the A-plus certification. If you've heard of A-plus, it basically proves that you know how to take apart a computer without blowing it up. Linux Plus from CompTIA is kind of at the same level. It proves that you can log in as root without destroying the system. I'm exaggerating a little bit, obviously, but it's a baseline certification. It says if you can pass the A-plus exams, you have the capability to learn enough that you could probably grow into your job. Well, I mean, literally, I would never hire a hardware technician on the basis of their having an A-plus designation as a hardware technician, but it's kind of like having a BA. It proves that you can learn. It doesn't prove that you actually know anything useful relevant to the job we're hiring you for. It proves that you can get to the point where you will be useful. That's kind of what a CompTIA is about. They're all entry-level certifications.
On the upside, it's a single exam, and the courses are usually cheap.
BSD certification. This was kind of an outlier. Even fewer people care about this than the mainstream ones. Because, well, honestly, how many large enterprises are running BSD? If you're not working for Yahoo, or Juniper, or...
Isilon.
Epsilon, okay,
ESD,
Probably
tons of firewalls.
There are a bunch, but they're all very niche markets. So if you're going to try and get hired at one of these companies, maybe this is a great idea. So this covers Dragonfly BSD, FreeBSD, NetBSD, and OpenBSD. Kind of like LPI, you have to know a little about all of them. So it's not narrowing your focus, it's, for most administrators, broadening your knowledge. Because most of the, I know the OpenBSD stuff down pat, no problem. Dragonfly BSD, never touched it. So for me to pass this, I would actually have to go out and learn more stuff than I know right now and get a broader exposure than I've had. So from that perspective, even some of the weird-ass certifications like BSDcertification.org is a little, it's valuable, right? It would show me that, okay, I have the flexibility to handle different systems and remember the details that are different between them. These guys only have two levels, BSDA, they're all associates or administrators or whatever at the entry level, and BSD Professional, which the website just says is for senior administrators. If you really want to know what the details are at a very low level, well, that's why they have a website.
There's something to mention about that. The nice thing about BSD certification is that the material that's being tested is contributed to by major people in the projects. So it's not some dude on the side says, I know X, Y, and Z about this product, that's what we're going to test on. They put out a bunch of sample questions, and people in the community vote as to what's going to be on the test. So it's a little less black boxy than a lot of certifications are.
Actually, that's a very good point that I wasn't really going to worry too much about covering, but I'll speak to it anyway. Both LPI and CompTIA have a community process, and I have been a subject matter for both the LPI 2, LPI 3, and Linux Plus exams. So, yes, my input theoretically shaped some of the questions on those exams, and it's all about, you know, which of these 30 things do you feel are relevant to an entry-level system administrator. Like, if you were going to hire an entry-level sysadmin, what of these things would you expect them to be able to do? And I'm one of, I don't know, for CompTIA, I think it was about 280 people, so fairly small pool. For LPI, it was actually even smaller pool than that. Basically offering, you know, based on what I've seen in the industry, this is what entry-level sysadmins need to know. So, like Sean said, these aren't like some of the courses and textbooks out there, which are just written by somebody in a back room who's never actually touched the system in their work in their life. The exams and the certifications are actually based on real world input.
How long do you last for? On the 3 years you have to recertify?
LPI used to be lifetime certification. When I wrote it, they swore up and down it was going to be lifetime certification. Now my LPICs are technically not lapsed. They have another word so that it doesn't say lapsed. But, yeah, basically expired. LPI, I think it's now 5 years?
Is it dormant?
Something like that, yeah.
It's grandfathered.
No, not grandfathered. Good. Grandfathered would imply that it's still valid and active. LPI has changed to, I think it's a 5-year cycle. CompTIAs are still permanent. You don't have to recertify on those.
Are you allowed to put it next to your name?
Only if it's still active.
So you can't.
So I could put A+, Network Plus, Security Plus, Server Plus, CTT, and Linux Plus beside my name out of that list, but I could no longer put LPIC beside my name.
Right. LPIC inactive.
That I actually could do.
It's true. That means you did write it, but it was a while ago.
It could be like, you know, LPIC Charter Certified Member or something like that. Yeah. I could, theoretically. BSDA, I think, is also...
What is it? One time LPI certified?
Yeah. BSDA is 5 years. BSDP is 3 years.
And that's also fairly common. As you go up the scale, you have to recertify more often. There are parallels. Oh, Kevin, you're right.
Yes.
You are getting a little bit of red.
There's a little bit of red.
That's it's only the red hat, guys.
The red hat.
Red hat has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 current certifications that they offer to people doing red hat.
Wow.
Now, in case it's not obvious, all of the red hat certifications apply equally to Red Hat, Scientific Linux, CentOS, Oracle Enterprise Linux, Oracle Unbreakable Linux, IBM's flavor of Linux, Dell's flavor of Linux, HP's flavor of Linux. Those are only the Red Hat derivatives that I can think of off the top of my head. So the Red Hat ones are actually a lot wider, a lot broader applicability than just Red Hat Enterprise Linux. And, of course, there's a lot of crossover to any shops running Fedora, too, because, well, same basic system. Yeah, these guys kind of went nuts, in my opinion. They still have the baseline certified system administrator. Here's the A again. They don't really have an intermediate. They jump straight to the senior level RHCE. And there's some... RHCE is not a joke. If you're an RHCE, you know your stuff. And I'll get into one of the reasons why this is so later on. JBoss? Okay, sure. The Certified Virtualization Administrator. Again, yeah, all right. I guess somebody somewhere needed a certification for this. Probably the U.S. federal government, knowing the way this works. Once you're an RHCE, then you can get Red Hat Certificates of Expertise, which include the certified... No, wait a minute. Sorry. If you get certain combinations of certificates of expertise, then you can also be a security specialist or a data center specialist. And if you're a RHCE, virtualization administrator, security specialist, and data center specialist, then you are a Red Hat certified architect. Hmm. At that point, I'm thinking you may as well just work for Red Hat.
Wow.
Yeah. Not build houses?
No, APGM hasn't sued their ass in court yet, which is something else I'll be getting to in a few moments. Mm-hmm. Novell / SUSE, since a lot of people still don't know that SUSE is owned by Novell. Yeah. Novell has the third oldest certification program overall of any Linux vendor. I don't mean third oldest Linux certification. I mean that Novell has been in the business of certifying that people know what they're doing for only slightly less time than IBM and HP has, and way longer than anybody else in this presentation. So they have a humongous education and training department, as do IBM and HP, since they've been at it just as long. Novell really, really pushed it, though. So they've got the process down pat. They've got good course material. They've got well-written tests, like balanced tests that don't, you know, require you to memorize the hex bytes involved in this network protocol and stuff like that that you never, ever need in real life. One of the CompTIA exams actually needed to know the byte values of certain protocols. Get real. It's an entry-level exam. Anyway, so... Novell certification, generally speaking, if you've got it, chances are you're not a wizard, but you're reasonably competent, in my personal experience. They have the Certified Linux Administrator 11.
Why is there an 11 after?
Because they're at SUSE version 11, and Novell has always done this. Even going back to the NetWare days, you were certified on a specific version of NetWare, so that people who certified on, say, SUSE 9... can't walk into a SUSE 11 shop and say, I'm a SUSE certified administrator, I know everything there is to know about your system. No, you don't. You know everything there was to know about my system. Big difference. So they have Linux administrator, they have a certified Linux desktop administrator, which probably sounds a little strange to most of the people in this room, but if you're a big shop running a large multi-user network, desktops are a whole other ballgame. Gilbert can attest to that, I think.
Not really.
Oh, come on. You run labs. Mm-hmm. No, if you get into the, like, 2,000 desktops, and that's people's personal desktops, you get issues that most of us will never, ever, thankfully, have to deal with. Certified Linux Professional is their intermediate stage. Certified Linux Engineer is their top-end certification. Two things of special note. If you are CompTIA Linux Plus certified, SUSE will just give you your Certified Linux Administrator certificate.
you have to write one short web-based test, basically, that proves that you actually remember your Linux Plus stuff. But it's trivial. It takes like 15 minutes. And poof, now you're SUSE Certified Linux Administrator. Conversely, if you write the exam for a Certified Linux Administrator 11, CompTIA automatically gives you your Linux Plus certificate, too. So that's actually one of the major reasons for people getting Linux Plus now, is as a shortcut to getting the CLA designation, because the CompTIA courses are usually cheaper.
What happens if the number is like, say, it's 11 and then the next version?
There's a date constraint. You have to have passed one within like the last 3 months, and then they figure out, based on which version of the CompTIA exam you wrote, which version of the Novell certification you get as an equivalency. I don't know exactly the algorithm, but they do actually track that. The other point is the use of the word engineer in Novell Certified Linux Engineer. In Manitoba, calling yourself an engineer is regulated by law. Novell is still fighting the legal battle to allow their people to call themselves engineers. In roughly 20 states, they now have the legal right to call themselves engineers. And Novell's official advice to everybody else is call yourself a CLE. Until we win those court battles, and then you can call yourself a certified Linux engineer.
So what do you say if someone asks you what CLE stands for?
You can say it stands for Certified Linux Engineer.
Right.
As long as you don't say, I am a Certified Linux Engineer. IBM has quite a few, including some rather curious ones. IBM Certified Operator. Which, you know, I was curious enough that I looked at the course description, and it basically amounts to, you know how to log in, and you know how to use the at and cron commands. Seriously. It's officially a certification for users of AIX.
How much is it?
Because
I totally
Sorry?
Want it.
I am certified user.
Wow. Okay, all right. Sure.
Then they added at.
So it's root free.
It's what?
It's root free.
Yes, actually, that's an excellent way to think of it. This is what can you do with the system without having sysadmin privileges? Use it. Certified system administrator. This is for AIX, by the way, not Linux. For Linux, AIX, on the subject of Linux, IBM officially says, go get CompTIA Linux Plus, or go get your RHCE, because we basically run Red Hat on their power systems, which run AIXL. They do not have a Linux-based certification currently, except insofar as if you are an IBM-certified advanced system expert, it covers some of the Linux stuff, too. Note, expert, not engineer. IBM decided to stop fighting the good fight about 20 years ago. So, again, wide variety depending on what your role is.
Change it to engine nerd.
I'm thinking if you are an advanced certified systems engineer, yeah, you probably see the humor in that.
I'll take that as a call.
When I get to the why part, Sun and Oracle. Sun has folded their entire education training thing into Oracle University.
Right?
Yeah. Now, I'm surprised that these guys haven't got sued, because they're not an accredited university, but whatever.
It can Sun, be for 100,000 a year.
Yeah, well. And the courses for this stuff? Wow, are they expensive?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I guess you'd know that now, wouldn't you?
Well, I didn't have to pay it, but yeah, a week's course was $4,000.
Oh, that's normal.
Yeah.
That's
for
normal.
What?
That's some AIX, some AIX file net training I was looking at. Was
well, I know, I'm just saying, in contrast to people who are used to taking, say, Microsoft certification courses, which is typically on the order of $500 a day. So
Microsoft is really the only ones that are that cheap, though. Well, and the CompTIA ones.
I wouldn't know.
Are cheap, too. No, $1,000 a day is standard for classroom training on pretty much any of this.
Well, this was a, by the way, this was a live virtual course.
Oh! And it's still cost, but yeah, that's about double what it would be for everybody else. Yeah, wow. Usually it's about $1,000 a day if you're actually sitting in a classroom with
facilities
equipment
based.
Given to you to, you know, somebody else is paying for the space, the instructor, the textbooks, the equipment. You just show up and do stuff. That's about $1,000 a day.
Yeah, it's 800 for...
Of which the instructor, having been one, does not see very much of that, by the way.
but then I didn't get a certification.
Online courses are anywhere from $500 to $750 a day. Well, actually, anywhere from $250 to $750 a day, depending on the course. If it's all like just webinar-type stuff, that should be like free, in my opinion. But typically, it's about $100 to $250 a day. Anyway, Solaris, we have Oracle Certified Associate, Certified Professional. Two distinctions within that. You can be a Solaris Certified Professional or a Cluster Certified Professional. And for those of you who know what Solaris clusters are, how on earth can you be a Cluster Certified Professional without also being a Solaris Certified Professional? Don't know, but it's not a prerequisite. Go figure. And then their Oracle Certified Expert apparently is somehow only relevant for networking or security. You can't be a Certified Expert in Solaris. Dunno. They also, because they use Red Hat Linux, but it's not Red Hat Linux anymore because they ripped out all the references to the words Red Hat and the logo and inserted Oracle Enterprise and the Oracle logo. And other than that, it's still binary compatible with kernel modules. But no, it's not Red Hat Linux. Of course, they have to have their own courses for it because it's not Red Hat Linux. So we have the Oracle Enterprise Linux Administrator Certified Associate. And the Oracle Enterprise Linux Certified Implementation Specialist. The Certified Associate is basically your usual entry-level certification. The Certified Implementation Specialist proves that you know how to simultaneously install Oracle Enterprise Linux on anywhere from 2 to 200,000 machines simultaneously across an entire enterprise around the world all at once using automated installation tools. Which... if you've ever done anything like that, is actually surprisingly hard. Apparently I was going to write something else at the end of this slide. I don't know what. HP certification and training program is, for lack of a better word, huge. These guys certify everything and anything that HP has ever dealt in their entire existence. The only thing I didn't see was HP certified transistor user. For HP UX, they have what they call a foundational certification, which is your usual entry level. You know how to log into a system, you know how to do basic admin tasks, you can add users, you can add printers, relatively simple stuff. Then they have the Certified System Expert, which they say is an intermediate level certification, but then you have to specialize in virtualization, networking and security, and or high availability. Anybody who specializes in high availability is not an intermediate level professional.
Or an HP user.
or working with HP UX. Yes, good point. However, that's for HP UX, by the way. Again, for Linux, HP sends you back to CompTIA and or Red Hat. SCO. Yes, they still exist. SCO has... the Certified System Administrator, the usual entry level. The Advanced Certified Engineer. Again, now, SCO, you may remember that at one point, SCO was owned by Novell. So they just assumed that Novell's legal department was going to fight their battles for them forever. However, they're no longer owned by Novell. There is no longer any court cases pending with SCO. All there are is people who call themselves Advanced Certified Engineers and immediately get smacked down, usually, and have to pay court costs for the smacking. So, unless you either drive a train for a living, or actually have been accredited as a PEng in Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Ontario, Alberta, any provinces with reciprocal agreements, don't call yourself a School Advanced Certified Engineer. At least Novell will help you fight the legal battle. And then you have the SCO Master Ace.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Master Ace.
There is no possible interpretation, but that they deliberately designed it so that they could call themselves Master Aces. And what it is you have two Advanced Certified Engineer diplomas. Because SCO has two versions of Unix. They sell UnixWare and they sell OpenServer. They are completely different from an administration perspective. And by completely, I mean completely. They don't even both look like they're Unix. Well, they don't look like they're the same Unix, that's for sure. So if you've got this for OpenServer and this for UnixWare, you are automatically a master ace.
Not the master ace.
No, I think if you're using SCO, it's definite that you're not one of the master race.
Actually, it says Unix has actually bought SCO January.
Who did?
Unix, UNIX, January 26th, bought the US.
UN what?
UNIX.
It's a pretty small company. But yeah, the SCO group itself, no, its only asset is its lawsuits.
And UnixWare had so much promise once upon a time.
Now, getting back to the engineering thing, there's actually one group I know in Alberta that does call themselves engineers. I did some consulting up there at Edmonton, and there was like the operating engineers have a local union. And they're basically guys that do heavy machinery. They call themselves operating engineers. You know,
yes.
They class by the means of.
What it amounts to is, in Manitoba, the law that created APEGM says, I'm paraphrasing, obviously, to use the term engineer in trade, you must be accredited by APEGM as an engineer. So it basically gives APEGM a monopoly on using the word engineer in any commercial setting. Federal Circuit Court of Canada has said that the guys who drive trains have been calling themselves engineers long before any of these laws were even passed, so they get grandfathered in, they're fine. As long as they don't try and pass themselves off as civil engineers, electrical engineers, chemical engineers, what have you. If they do that, yeah, they're still in trouble. Different provinces, and Manitoba actually does have another law, because the guys who run boilers can also call themselves engineers in Manitoba.
They even have classification.
Yes. So most likely in Alberta they have a very similar thing.
And there's an operating engineer as well.
Okay.
The union of operating engineers.
So, yes, I was a little oversimplifying slightly on the engineers topic, but if you are not permitted to use the word by law, don't, is what it boils down to. So we've done who, the what, where, and when. Most of these certification programs use the standard IT exam model, where you go online to either the VUE or Prometric websites, register for an exam. There's 4 VUE testing centers in Manitoba. There's 3 Prometric testing centers in Manitoba. 2 of them are the same. So really, there's only a total of 4 or 5 places in Manitoba to write. You can write, schedule it for any time the center's open. You just walk in, show his photo ID, sit down at a computer, write the exam, done. Whoopity-doo-dah.
You ready to get a prompter?
There is a fee for every exam. Generally speaking, rating the exam itself is anywhere from, on the low end, I think about $75. On the high end, the most expensive one that I know of personally is $395. And depending on which program you're writing for, it's a combination of either VUE or Prometric, who has to have a proctoring fee, and whatever the original vendor wants to charge for the right to let you write the test. So yeah, anywhere from $100 to $400, roughly speaking, is what you can expect. Most of them are $100 to $200, most of them. So most of them, it's dead simple. You put your credit card in online, you pick a date and time, you walk in, you write it, you're done. Some of them require you to go to a specific place at a specific time. Red Hat Certified Engineer, remember I said, one of the reasons RHCE is known to be more valuable, not valuable, that's the wrong word.
Has more prestige? Considered harder?
It's definitely considered harder. It's considered more useful. Actually proves more that you can actually do the work in a real-world setting as opposed to, I memorized the textbook. Is because Red Hat requires you to go to one of their testing centers and do a hands-on, scenario-based exam under the direct supervision of one of their exam proctors. In Canada, Edmonton, Halifax, Montreal, Ottawa, that's it. Each of those 4 places only has a testing proctor available on average 2 days a month. And basically that's because Red Hat only has about a dozen people worldwide supervising our HCE exams. I don't know the exact number, but there's a small number of people who literally fly around the world and do nothing but live out of hotels for probably half their time. It's mainly RHCE instructors who also do the exam supervision. But some, they also have some people out of their consulting group. So people who theoretically know what they're doing. And they come up with scenarios. I mean, obviously there's a library of scenarios that they draw upon. But they jointly come up with scenarios. They just make up, they just make stuff up. You know, what's going, how can we tell for sure that a candidate understands what they're doing as opposed to has memorized the textbook answer? And they will set up a randomized test for you. So if you write the RHCE exam twice in a row, walk in, write it, walk out the door, do a 180, walk back in the door, you'll have a completely different exam. Totally different questions, not a single thing in common. If you can't make it to Edmonton, Halifax, Montreal, or Ottawa, the next closest testing centers are Chicago or a suburb of Minneapolis called Shoreview. The American sites typically are open for about 1 week out of every month. More demand, I guess. The Red Hat RHC is not the only one that does that. But out of all those certifications that I just ran through, there's only about four or five of them that actually have testing like this. Most of them, the vast majority, are just write a computer-based exam. And of the computer-based exams, it's about 75% are just multiple choice. So if you have really good memory and you just read the textbook front cover to cover, you'll probably pass. The other 25% are what they call scenario-based, where they give you a simulated environment and they require you to type in commands that would accomplish the goal, or mouse clicks that would accomplish the goal, or whatever. Why is probably the thorniest part of certification? As I said when I started, there are people who consider it to have absolutely no value whatsoever. This is just throwing money away. All it proves is that you had a deep enough wallet that you could afford to go and write the exams. For some people, that's true. For the small consultant, like one-man, two-man operation, yeah, certification is kind of irrelevant. I'll grant that, no problem. On the other hand, if you are, Great West Life, and you're looking to hire a Unix system administrator, there's an entire HR department that's in charge of hiring. They don't know squat about Unix. How are they supposed to know who is worth hiring as a Unix system administrator and who isn't? As an HR department, oh, well, he's got a certification for this. He must be competent. Does that mean that the candidate is competent? No, not necessarily. It gets you in the door. All these certifications are establishing a baseline level of competency. And even if it means that you can just regurgitate the, you know, Red Hat Certified Engineer Certification Guidebook, bad example with their tests, but if all it means is you can regurgitate the entire contents of the IBM or the HP course, that's not entirely a bad thing, because that means you can probably know exactly what command to type in almost every scenario that you're going to hit as a entry-level administrator. The other places certifications are useful is in consulting work. If you're needing to establish credibility, and really, even the job scenario, it's about establishing credibility. Why do we regulate engineers? Well, we regulate engineers for safety reasons. We regulate engineering technologists primarily for safety reasons. Because if an engineer designs, and the classic example is, an engineer designs a building, their stamp of approval goes on the design, building falls down, kills 100 people, who do we blame? The engineer. Very simplistic, but essentially that's why we legislate it. Some trades we legislate simply, they may have been legislated originally as a safety measure, but certain of them have come around to the point where really we're just legislating them so that somebody has an exclusive. And that's kind of what this is about. Now, geology. Okay, there's probably only about half a dozen people in the room who remember Gary Mills, who has a degree in geology. No degree in computer science, no formal training in computer science, and yet this is the guy that kept the U of M mail system running smoothly for 20 decades. Years?
Yeah, at least a couple decades. Yeah.
20 plus years, and frankly the guy that I learned most of my Unix foo from originally. Does he have a certification? No, as a matter of fact, I know he does not. I know he's taken some training later on in his career, but that was for, you know, how to manage an OSPEX disk array. Very specific stuff. Does that mean he doesn't know what he's talking about? No, absolutely not. There are many, many people who know exactly what they're talking about who have never gotten any certification of any sort in the field. In fact, odds are I'm the only person in the room with any kind of Unix certification, statistically speaking. Anybody else? One. Okay. Hey, I am not completely alone tonight. And we'll note the other guy in the room works for a large corporation called IBM.
Are you a certified operator?
Are you a certified user?
I had to get the user first before I could become a certified administrator.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But it was at AX version 3, and then when AX 4 came out, I would have had to rewrite this.
Yeah, that's great. By that point, it already served its purpose.
Yeah.
Knowledge-based certification like this is not typically something that everybody writes and then keeps up on an ongoing, perpetual basis. Steve's example and my example both reinforce that. I'm LPIC certified, but I let them lapse. Have I rewritten them? No. Am I going to? Probably not. What's the value? I have now established... What?
Unless you start job hunting.
Well, even if I start job hunting now, though...
Experience.
I've established my bona fides... or however you pronounce that. I've got the years in harness doing the work. I have the deployments in my portfolio that I can point to and say, I designed this system, and it's still working 15 years later. So I don't need to build up the credibility without being able to provide evidentiary proof. If you want, you can look at it as, this is the evidentiary proof to get in when you don't have the portfolio of projects.
And even so, many of the IT5 won't stress that way, actually, or are equivalent, et cetera, to prove
yep.
you do it, and that's it. You have a track record.
Yep. Now, by the same token, the company I'm working with right now is taking, it's a phone company. They're taking some of the outside plant people, the guy who climbed poles and who climbed towers, who want to move ahead, who want to get into better paying jobs, and they're saying, okay, we'll pay for the training. If you can pass the Linux Plus, and there's two others, basically a set of three entry-level certifications, we'll move you from that department into this department, and you get bumped up a pay grade, and you keep all your time in, what's the term? You keep all your union seniority, even though you're actually moving into a different area altogether. So it's a measure that the company can say, can you learn enough stuff quickly enough to be even moderately effective in this new job? And because they don't have enough people to sit down and talk to each of these guys individually and, you know, over the course of a few months, figure out how much they know and can they really do it, can they not, they don't have time for that. So it's basically, here's the standard learning curriculum. Here's the exams you have to pass. You can pass the exams, come on down. Can't pass the exams, keep climbing poles. So, yes, in practice, all of this usually boils down to be job-based, job requirement-based. Whether it's a formal requirement, or whether it's an informal requirement, or whether this is just something to give you an edge to get in the door somewhere. Like I said, enhanced career mobility, upwards and sideways. Upwards from entry level. So if you know somebody who's working at, oh, let's say, Convergys, classic example. If you're working at Convergys, you usually have to have a clue. If you've been working there more than, oh, say, 6 months, you're usually fairly level-headed. If you haven't killed your supervisor or any customers, you're, you know, reasonably good at dealing with users. I see someone else in the room knows what I'm talking about. I'm using Convergys as an example. And that's your classic scenario of somebody in an entry-level job wants to move up. How do they move up? Certification is one of the answers for how to move up. If you can prove that you have the knowledge, even though you don't have the experience, that gets your foot in the door for many, many types of positions that otherwise you basically have no hope of even making it onto the hiring manager's desk. The example I just gave with DMTS, it's upwards and sideways simultaneously. Sideways can also be relevant. You know, you're stuck in the server group, but you're tired of dealing with hardware. You want to deal with the operating system. You talk to the HR manager, they go, but all you know is hardware. How do you fight that? Well,
You prove it. You're not proving that you are, you know, the be-all and end-all of OS management, but you're proving you know something. Sorry, somebody else had a question.
When it comes to employers, how do they view technology degrees as opposed to certifications?
Roughly equivalent, in my experience.
No, not right now. Saying as somebody who's looking for jobs off and on, the requirement is a BA or a BSc, and then extra. Most places won't touch you if you don't have a bachelor's degree.
What about technology degrees that are happening through, like, say, Red River?
Different scenario.
I mean, Darren went through Red River.
Yeah, they're not considered equivalent, but they are considered.
So their entry point as well.
Yeah, it depends on the job, right?
Right.
Like a computer
Absolutely.
Science degree and a Red River diploma
okay.
are completely different animals. A CS person could do the job of a CAP and not vice versa. So depending
yes.
on the job you're going for, it may require at least the skills of that.
Well, speaking from about 10 years ago, or 2011, 2001, yeah, in about 2001, and this thing goes around on a cycle. You know, what was valid 10 years ago will probably be valid again in about 5 years, because it's about a 15-year cycle. And the cycle goes between paper, experience, knowledge, certification. By paper, I mean university degree. About 10 years ago, everybody and their dog was hiring computer science grads as programmers, and then wondering why none of their new programmers could program. Because they were hiring comp sci grads, not Red River grads, basically. Wow. Yeah, it's exactly what was happening. They're looking at university degree. Ooh, must have a university degree. That means they're good. No, it means they learned a specific curriculum. The Red River. The Red River diploma doesn't mean they're good or bad. It means they learned a specific curriculum that's a lot more applicable to somebody that you want to sit down and have them start programming on day one.
On a particular platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. CS is generalized. Red River is targeted towards platform.
Absolutely. And that's traditionally the difference between university degrees and college degrees. College degrees are practical.
Diplomas. Are they called degrees? I thought in college they were
diplomas. Whatever.
Diplomas.
Sorry. Yes, diplomas.
Only universities can issue degrees.
Yes, you're right.
I gotta get my engineering diploma.
And such a thing exists, and that too is enshrined in law. That's not APGM, though, that's CTTAM. If you get an engineering diploma. So yeah, is it valuable? It'll vary. It may be completely useless today, and it might be worth its weight in gold 5 years from now. There will be, I can pretty much guarantee, looking at the last 20 years, there will be another cycle where vendor certification is the be-all and end-all for people hiring Unix admins or storage admins or whatever. And then 5 years after that, it'll be completely useless.
Sure. Sort of an FYI, I found talking with a number of employers last time I was able to apply for work, a lot of them also got people sending their resumes with certification from, let's say, Robertson or other
mm-hmm.
so-called career colleges. And a number of those employers said that as soon as they saw that, if there was no university degree or Red River diploma, they'd toss the resume right away.
Yeah.
That's what's happening now. There's tons of stuff that I could do, but I don't have the BA. So.
Mm-hmm. I have the same problem. It depends on the diploma, or it depends on the company and the job you're applying
mm-hmm.
for.
Yep.
There's a couple firms in the city that I would apply to, and I wouldn't even get a phone call back.
Mm-hmm.
While I might be qualified for the job,
mm-hmm.
I'm not a PNG.
Yep.
And I might be more qualified than the PNG that applied beside me, but I'm not a PNG. So it all depends on the company you're applying to.
And sometimes you can be overqualified. In fact, I have a BSc. 4 year. I was working for Convergys again, when I was able to work for Convergys, you know, period.
Well, they existed.
And they said, oh, well, you've got a university degree. Well, that's too bad. You're still staying on the phones. We're giving this other job to somebody, you know, because they've been nice to us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that happens too.
Yeah.
But from cold calling, it really depends on the organization.
Yeah.
If you're going to apply to an organization that's risk averse, like insurance, a degree required. Certifications are nice,
yeah.
but they need the degree because they're risk adverse. They have auditors, and they can say, "Well, how do you know this person is certified to run on this?" Well, the certification says you can run a particular product X. It doesn't necessarily you understand it. Other places, like, you know, when you want to develop websites or something for a company, well, a college degree is better suited for that job because you're targeting specific technologies in specific places.
Exactly.
So if you want to be jack of all trades, you go and you get a computer science degree, computer engineering degree, and a set of Red River diplomas, and on top of that, specific certifications from Cisco, Microsoft, Red Hat, and choose whoever else you'd like.
By then, you're ready to retire.
And that will get you a step foot in the door.
Yeah. No, then you won't get a foot in the door because you have too many certifications, meaning that you haven't specialized in any particular one.
Yeah.
Like, it's all a political game.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, looking for something that actually...
Not just do this,
but think about situations and understand.
There's no cert for that.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we have no way to assess. Like, if I'm hiring someone, I have no way to know until I have hired them if that person has one shred of common sense.
3 months probation. And you can't do like the FBI does. They sit down the master guy at a terminal, and they sit down the guy they're interviewing at a terminal, and he basically says, "Okay, you can see what I'm doing now. Keep up." That's basically the way they do their interview.
No, okay.
Again, every organization is different. When I was hiring, a Red River diploma for the specific job I was hiring for could have been equal. And I hired Red River students over university grads. Mm-hmm. In the co-op program, I sorted by courses. And it wasn't, did you take CS course A, B, and C? It was, okay, the people that took critical thinking and did better than a B, they were on the top of the list, and all the CS courses came after. Again, because I wanted people that could think, not people that are targeted in specific areas. But that was just the enterprise I was in and the requirements for that and the people I was willing to work with.
Well, as much as I do see value in certification, not as much today as there was in the past, but as I said, that day will also return. Despite the value of certification, the best senior programmers I have ever hired and ever worked with have consistently been people who used to work in a kitchen. I don't know why. That's the only thing I can come up with, is you got to be able to figure out critical path dependencies in your head, sort of on the fly, in order to work in a kitchen. You have to be able to handle dependencies, you have to be able to handle deadlines, you have to be able to handle scheduling, not in a formal way, but you have to have enough common sense to just kind of figure it out. To this day, if I have someone who's qualified out the wazoo on paper, or I have someone who used to be the, you know, the kitchen manager at a Perkins, I'll take the ex-kitchen manager, hands down. I won't even talk to the other guy.
I'll actually give you a bit of a smile. I have one friend who used to work for the Department of Finance provincially, and he said his employer didn't necessarily demand a degree, although that was part of the requirement, you know, put down by his boss. He wanted somebody who could ask the right questions and know who to phone for to get the answers.
That's another very valuable skill.
Well, I guess it also bears to mention that the difference between an honor CS grad and a computer engineer is that an engineer belongs to a professional organization, which has legal ramifications in and of itself.
Yes.
CS grad does not. There's no code of conduct that we have to uphold legally in order to practice as a computer scientist.
Yeah, things like KIPS, for instance, they have a code of conduct
that
they adhere to. That's another national organization, right?
Mm-hmm.
ACF, another organization.
But they have no standing in law bearing on you practicing your profession.
And also to be called an expert legally for purposes of expert witness, certain credentials have to be met.
Yep.
And whether a Red River person can be an expert, that's relative to a different board entirely than, say, I have a CS degree and have been operating in this capacity for this long.
So do employers look at memberships in places like KIPS and ITRIP and stuff like that as being valid?
If they know what they are,
Yeah.
Just like MUG is a certification at some point, right? You're a member of this group that says that you at one time at least took the effort to know what Unix was.
Hell, it's on my resume.
So.
Yep.
It got me in the door at a couple places, honestly.
Yep. Well, it shows that you're able to be part of a community.
Mm-hmm.
And function as part of a community.
If they recognize it, right? If it's just a bunch of acronyms, they're going to go, it's acronyms, big deal, right? It's all targeted toward what they're expecting to see.
Yep. And speaking as this year's president, I will point out that hiring managers do look for whether you've been on the board of any voluntary organizations. That is something that even if they don't recognize the acronym, they usually go, ooh, they're on the board. That means they have some organizational ability. They have some sense of responsibility. They may not be useful in any other way, shape, or form, but,
but yeah, it's totally me.
It's like a weighted score, right? You're a member of an organization, okay, that's 1 point. You're on the board of the organization, that's 10 points. You have a Linux Plus certification, that's 5 points. You have a computer engineering degree, that's 50 points. You know, like there's no silver bullet. And if you have the wrong certifications for that job, well, that's worse than useless. So, yeah, but the point is, ultimately, the options are there, both for people on both the employee and the employer. Because as an employer, if you want to train people, how do you know if the training took? How do you know if that was a useful investment of your money and of your employee's time, which was really your money? Can they get the certification?
Well, that's why we have probationary employment.
Yeah, unfortunately, the practice and the trend in industry is to not train.
Yeah.
It's to choose the people that have decided to pay for the training themselves and hire them.
Yep.
And there's even a trend, if you have people installed already, to make them into the training to upgrade those.
Yeah,
wow.
That's...
I haven't come across that yet. It's mostly been no.
Yeah.
I did, but that was basically because my boss was a PM, and should have been what he was, but he felt it was...
That's another drawback of professional organizations, is that membership in them, if they have suitable clout, tend to give you the God complex.
Well, and then on top of that, my boss was the president of APM.
And
the guy directly underneath him, who I reported to, became president of APGM after him.
So right, okay.
I had a fun time for a while.
Well, I can think of one company in the Winnipeg area that's currently developing embedded Linux-based devices. As far as I know, the only person they employ who does not have a PNG is the receptionist and the janitor. Their webmaster had to have a PNG.
Yeah, and I understand that mentality where I came from.
Like, what does that have to do with being a webmaster?
But that's what works for their company, so...
As a receptionist?
To the best of my knowledge, the receptionist does not have an engineering degree at all. To the best of my knowledge.
Engineers typically hire receptionists that are...
Yeah, I just stopped there.
Not on the bright side.
Stop there.
They're receptional.
And then marry them.
Exactly.
Sometimes.
I'm sorry if I offended any engineers away from you.
Oh, I offended the ears as a point of course.
Well, I know we have some engineers in the room, but not again, you know.
Everybody hold up your hands, I want to see your little
fingers. No, they definitely do have a place, and their credential is important.
Oh, I understand that.
So.
Yeah. But it's important to things that it's relevant to.
But what it means is you've been able to grind your way to a certain program.
That's right.
I mean, the medical profession does the same thing.
Yep.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You become a doctor by, you know, fatiguing yourself to the point of exhaustion.
Trial
you
by
can
fire.
Do it.
And university professors, too, they're
coming. Oh, no. No.
Oh, those are completely different. Yay.
That's kind of wacky. You need an education degree to teach high school, but not to teach university.
Yeah.
They just flop in. And often they come in with the wackiest concepts of how to teach anything, you know. And you'll go from prof to prof with completely different standards of how they run exams and how they run their courses and the work they put into the course themselves, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Most definitely. Anyway, it's 9:57.
Yeah.
We should actually get out of here before 10 for once. Actually, only twice this year.
Thank you.
So...
And to go home and study for the certificate. That's it for this podcast. Thanks for listening. For more Mug Meetings summaries or for more information about the Manitoba Unix User Group, check out our website at muug.mb.ca.